What is up, everybody? Welcome back to University of Adversity. I'm your host, Lance Isios. We have a jam-packed episode for you today. We go deep, we cover a lot. You may have to do this one in two parts, but I assure you that it will be worth your time. I have somebody that I respect a great deal. I've seen the work that she's done and the years of experience that she has and the way she speaks, the way she shows up in her life. She's amazing. And we are also part of the Fit for Service community as well. So those of you that don't know, that's the Aubrey Marcus Fit for Service program that started in 2019. It's kind of evolved into what it is today. And yeah, it's brought together a lot of great people. I've had a lot of awesome people from that program on the show. And today we have Alicia Kay joining us. And she is a badass. She's a distinguished professional with a wealth of experience spanning over 20 years in dealing with trauma and psychotherapy. Having undergone an impactful personal transformation journey herself, Alicia's perspective on trauma and psychotherapy is underpinned by both professional knowledge and personal experience. She strongly believes in introspection as a means to understand and heal from emotional pain, trauma, and shame that can hinder spiritual growth. Through her own emotional exploration, she was able to understand the root cause of her struggles and has been able to transform those experiences into lessons for others. Alicia advocates for a combined approach of traditional therapy and holistic healing, which takes into account unconscious beliefs, feelings, and patterns. She opposes the idea of medicating individuals based on a diagnosis and encourages reliance on intuitive intelligence for guidance in the healing process. Alicia's views highlight the transformational potential of confronting and healing trauma to discover one's true self and purpose. Some things and areas that we talk about today, timestamps that you're probably going to want to pay attention to, are: we explore transformation through self-reflection and healing, healing through confronting deep emotional wounds, trauma's influence on understanding others' behaviors, exploring core wounds for personal transformation, navigating personal growth through self-awareness, shifting focus towards self-reflection and growth, shame-based coping mechanisms in addiction, shame as a root cause of addiction, emotional triggers in addiction, recovery protocol, healing trauma through unconscious behavior exploration, fostering children's mental resilience through empowerment, healing trauma through somatic breath awareness, and tailoring breath work for individual readiness. We have, like, as you can hear in this, it goes very in depth and we cover a lot. And if you are somebody who struggles with trauma, or you're somebody who is new to, well, maybe you're struggling with something and you may have not have been in therapy, you may have thought about it, you thought about traditional, or you thought about more of the kind of the newer age therapy that takes into account a lot more of the somatic breath work and other things like that. I just lost my train of thought as far as like what that's called. But you get what I'm saying. Traditional psychotherapy, traditional therapy versus like today's modern therapy, where stuff that I am working on, like breath work and meditation journaling and like really getting to the deep somatics and moving energy that way versus just having conversations in therapy. Both are effective, but that's why I think you guys are going to love Alicia because she is an expert, has been doing this for 20 years, and now she's kind of combining both worlds. And so if you're somebody that's curious, I definitely recommend listening to this right till the end and taking notes. She's also offering free calls, discovery calls, and she's got a new program out, which is going to be badass, called Breakthrough Bliss, designed to help you clear out emotional blocks, trauma, and align with your authentic self. So I'm excited for this episode, you guys. She's also got a podcast coming out called Alive and Awake with Alicia, where you're going to be able to get involved in her world and listen to all of her perspectives, as well as awesome guests. And yeah, she's a badass and she's doing great things. So I'm excited to share this conversation with you today. So before we get into today's episode, we're going to have a quick word from our sponsors. What's up, everybody? Today's episode is brought to you by, full transparency, my company, Mike Up Media. For those of you that don't know, I don't really promote it that much on here, but I probably will start a little bit more. I've had a podcast agency for the last few years, and we used to specialize in podcast launches, and I coach people through how to launch podcasts and all the things. We recently have pivoted more towards getting people booked on podcasts, but we still do podcast launches and we offer the same things. I have been very passionate about helping people that have inspiring stories, missions, and I like to encourage them to get that into the world and get seen, right? And I believe that podcasts are the way to do that. Now, it's not the only thing, but I believe that it's a big one, and it's something that I have used in my own life, and I decided to, why not offer that to the world? So that is, you know, what this is about, is if you're an inspiring leader, you know of somebody that you think would be good fit, and they want to get booked on podcasts, let me know, hit me up. I have a little bit of an offer happening right now that we can discuss. You can feel free to book a call with my team. I have a link down below. It's connected to my website, and we can have a chat and see if you're a good fit. Okay, so Mike Up Media, book a call if you want to get booked on podcasts. You're tired of being the best kept secret. You have a powerful mission, and it's time for you to get that into the world. So take advantage of the special promo. Talk to our team on the call, book a call, and look forward to hearing from you. All right, an uninterrupted podcast episode with the great and powerful Alicia Kay.
Life is going to give you challenges, struggles. It's going to force you to face your fears. Even though these may feel like your worst enemy, in truth, these are actually your greatest allies. My name is Lance Isios. Welcome to the University of Adversity.
Alicia, welcome to University of Adversity.
Thanks, Lance. Happy to be here.
I'm excited to dive into all the things. There's so many different ways that we can go in this, from talking about the seventh dimensions to trauma to, there's so many things that I'm fascinated by. And for you especially, I've learned a lot about you from getting to know you and being in the same communities that you are on this journey of growth and expansion and learning all the things and really helping people discover those gifts within them while figuring it out yourself and sharing what you learn along the way. So I really admire your work, and it's great to see somebody on a similar path, but you know, doing the things and willing to show up. And what I've always kind of been interested in about, even, you know, with this show and getting to know people, is kind of like, why, what drew them into this kind of work in the first place? You know, like, we all have those moments. And I know that you had a very challenging upbringing, and there's a lot of different pieces to it. But I'm curious, like, when you think back now, after doing this work, working with trauma and psychotherapy and doing this deep work, like, for the last 20 years, you ever think back and just be like, why did I, like, what was the reason why I got into this? And has it changed since you started?
Yeah, no, great question. It certainly has changed because when I first got into it, I was what I would call a seeker. You know, I just wanted answers to try to explain things that I either didn't understand or why I was the way that I was or why the things that happened to me happened. Back then, I would say I was more in a very, I guess, like a fragile state. You know, I didn't know myself. I didn't know what this world was all about. And in some ways, I was back then, I wouldn't say that it was a blessing that I didn't have parents that taught me. I would say it was an absolute curse, right? I had a mom that was 16, you know, when she had me. And then I had a dad that essentially was also 16 that didn't want a child. And so I grew up essentially without a parent to parent me. And back then I was thinking like, that's a terrible thing. Like, I'm missing out on something that everybody got but me. But now I know that really put me on the path to find out answers. Like, I was craving knowledge. So I really dove into, when I got into my career as a psychiatrist, a psychologist, I didn't know what I wanted to do and why. I just knew that I wanted to be able to help people the way that certain people helped me along my path. So I had teachers that like took me under their wing or friends, parents who like took me in because essentially they saw that I needed help. I needed support. I needed mentoring. And sometimes I just needed a safe place to be. And I wanted to be that source for other people, you know, that helped me along my way. And that was really the driving factor that got me into my profession to do the work that I'm doing. Now, looking back, I can see that was really my soul pulling me onto that path so that I could do what I'm doing now, which is to really teach people that what has happened to them is part of a greater purpose and for a greater reason if they choose to face it, feel it, work through it, and alchemize it into something that makes them feel fulfilled inside, right? So turning their pain into their purpose and not getting so attached to their story, and really helping them see, you know, the bigger picture of why these certain things happen to them, which is my passion.
I love how aligned we are with that. Like, when you're saying that, it's like you're articulating exactly what my passion in life is too. And it's just so beautiful to hear because yeah. I think it's the most important work. I mean, maybe I'm biased, but like, you know, helping people excavate and move through the shit to discover what's there, been there the whole time, and then being able to take that and like help them amplify that and help other people. Like, I mean, what else is more important than that? Like,
yeah, it's not, you know, it really is the gift of service.
Yeah.
It's the gift of that keeps me going. I don't think there's anything that lights me up more than seeing someone, you know, have those aha moments of like, wait a minute. You mean I'm not the messed up one? You mean that there's nothing wrong with me? Like, you know, yeah. to be that mirror for them is really, it's a gift. Love it.
What was the shift for you though? Like when you, I'm curious, like you had a mentor, like what was the initial feeling or experience that happened where you saw a difference in who you were? And then once you did the work, some of the work, whatever that work was, you're like, oh, I feel different. I feel like this is helpful. Like, was there something that you can remember, or like a book or something like that that was big for you back then?
I don't know if it was one thing specifically. There's a couple things that happened. One was when I was in my really deep dark night of my soul, in my 20s, where I was, you know, really suicidal. I was drinking and doing drugs every weekend. I was really promiscuous. I had come off of a super tough bodybuilding show where I put my body through the test. Like, I was always, you know, pushing my limit and pushing the edge and like doing the hard thing. And I just realized that I, you know, was unhappy. I didn't want to be here. I wasn't living life right. I couldn't do it on my own. I felt like I failed. I felt like I couldn't figure life out. And I certainly did not believe in God or believe in anything spiritual. I was like, hell no. Like, if I'm dealing with all this evil in the world, you know, at that time I was working in a rape crisis center. So all of my clients were significantly abused. And I was really exposed to the darkness of our society in a very, very eye-opening world, like culture shocking way.
Wow.
And it really changed a lot and changed my worldview. And I just got down on my knees and I just prayed. I was like, listen, if there is a God, if you are real, like you need to help me. You need to save me. You need to show me something that I don't know. And I really feel like from that point on, things started to shift for me, where I started getting what I now know as downloads or insights from my higher self, from God, Jesus, whatever you choose to resonate with. For me, it was that. And I started to see things that I couldn't see before about my life, where I had a teacher in seventh grade. He was my French teacher. And he said to me, you know, Alicia, you could sell ice cubes to Eskimos in the winter and still make money. And I was like, I don't even know what that meant back then. And I was like, okay, whatever, dude. Like, okay. And then in my sociology class, I had a professor who had asked the class, if anybody in this classroom doesn't want to have children, raise their hand. And I was like, oh yeah, help me right here. Like, I am not bringing a child into this ugly world. No way. After all I've seen and all I've endured, I was like, I am not putting any other person through that. And then he looked me dead in the eyes because I was the only person that had raised my hand. And he said, Alicia, if you do not have children, it is a disservice to this world. Mm. And I, again, didn't know what he meant because they saw something in me that I could not see in myself. Like, they saw my light. They saw my essence. They saw who I really was at my core. But all I saw myself was like a broken, wounded child, you know, a broken, wounded person that didn't fit in with everybody else. So it was like those seeds or breadcrumbs that were planted for me along the way where people would see things in me that I was like, no way. Like, what did they see? And these experiences would happen to me that I'm like, I felt unworthy of, or I felt undeserving of, because I didn't know myself and I didn't see myself. Like, my professor in college asked me to be a teaching assistant for my experimental psychology class. I was like, me? Be your teaching assistant? Like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I wrote that paper last night until midnight. You know, like, I was like not in touch with the truth of who I was for so long. But as I started to get these downloads, these things were revealed to me, like, no, Alicia, like, you have something special in you. Like, it's, you know, open your eyes, see what other people see. And so, like, these things gradually started to work through me that started to help me change my view about myself and kind of why I went through those things and how to use them and not to be ashamed of them and to not feel broken anymore, to really feel like it was part of my greater plan.
So you started to get more in tune with, like, would you say the like synchronicities and like things happening, opportunities, and you started to understand that that was what was happening? Is that about right?
But before, yeah, I would say like aware spirit, of it? Yeah, spirit started to reveal to me that I was seeing myself wrong. You know,
how did it, like, how, like, in, I just love like understanding like how that, because I know what you mean, but yeah. like how did that feel for you? Like, what did you see different? Because it's sometimes so hard to put your finger on it, but it's different. And I can feel like it's different for everybody.
It is. Yeah, it's such an individual process. And that's why I truly stand behind the work is within. Right? And the way that spirit speaks to you is only the way that you will understand it and that you will hear it. It is your strong intuitive knowing that is the key, right? If I wasn't willing to essentially look at my pain or look at the things I was ashamed of through therapy, through journaling, through confronting my mother, my father, through doing my really, really hard, deep emotional work, that's when that stuff started to come in and be revealed to me around why I chose the path that I chose and the parents that I chose and really what I'm here to teach people.
Yeah.
Did I answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's just so interesting. The journey of how we sort of, you know, start to feel into things and see things and become more receptive to like what's kind of been there, but we just didn't notice.
Well, we can't notice if it's all that baggage, right? All that buildup of that dense pain, trauma, shame, we don't have an open channel. It's too dense. Like spirit can't communicate to us if literally like our chakra systems are blocked.
Yeah, let's dig into that. So what I love about the work you do is you've been doing this for a long time in the traditional therapy sense, and you're an expert on trauma. And now, you know, you see a lot more people talking about it different ways, and it's become a lot more important. But speak to us about some of the work that you did with your own trauma and how that's helped, but also what you see, what you saw about trauma in a lot of these people and just the importance of working through it.
Yeah. So back in my early life, in my 20s, I would definitely have something that society would label as complex PTSD or post-traumatic stress.
For sure. Yeah.
Where I was having a ton of nightmares. I was constantly triggered. I had really up and down relationships. I had a part of my personality that was incredibly aggressive and used to fight all the time, but a part of me that used to self-sabotage and eat and binge all the time. Like I really had, you know, I was messed up in a lot of ways from like society's viewpoint and, you know, putting it in a diagnostic category, I would have had probably half of the disorders in the DSM-5, except for, you know, I probably would have been labeled as a bipolar at that point. But I had a lot going on. And what I started to really understand through my training and through my work, like I really feel that my profession and the work that I started to do saved me, right? Because it made me understand that the things that I was experiencing and how I was behaving wasn't the real me. It was a symptom of what was unhealed in me, right? So I always look at people with what is unhealed that is presenting right now as a roadmap to navigate the root cause and what's unresolved within, right? So every diagnosis in the DSM-5 has a root cause of trauma, right? They don't want to say that. They don't want us to know that because it helps to put people in a category and, in my opinion, medicate them, right? And give them this thing that's supposed to make them feel better or fix them. And I don't need to get into my soapbox around why that is, but we can guess that there's, you know, a lot of kickback for keeping people unawakened and medicated and not really trusting the intuitive intelligence within them to heal themselves, right? So unlike many people out there, I was really able to do that deeper work and heal myself from complex trauma because I had the tools to do it, right? I was helping my clients do it as I was also helping and healing myself. Because what we know is that relationships are mirrors and it will activate or bring up stuff in you for you to look at. But most of us want to avoid it, push it away, not feel it, not face it, numb it, run from it, escape from it, until eventually it gets so bad that we're forced to do that. So when it comes to my clients, it really is like kind of like looking at what's happening in front of me as a roadmap to what is going on unconsciously in the nervous system that has not been felt or dealt with. Because our body's always communicating to us and sending us signals. So I look at the beliefs they have about themselves. I look at the feelings that are coming up. I look at patterns that keep repeating in their lives.
Like addictions? Addictions and...
Addictions, relationships, the way that they like maybe self-sacrifice or submit or... you know, give away their power in relationships or in their jobs, the way that they don't take care of themselves or their bodies and their coping habits, how they self-soothe, what they were taught when they were young, what they got what they got when they were young that they didn't want, but what they needed and didn't get. Like, I do a full, complete history and understanding of what is making this person respond this way in present day. Because the problem that's presenting in the moment usually has nothing to do with what's going on right now.
Mm. Yeah, that seems to be the theme of pretty much everything, even in health too.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's crazy. Like, so how do you know if somebody has worked through their trauma? Mm. You know, like, what are the signs that somebody may show that maybe they haven't moved through it, or maybe they have, or maybe they think they have, but, or maybe they're halfway? Like, what does that look like?
So my spiritual gift is called clairsentience. And so I'm very sensory and I can feel energetically a lot. And you can see how that may have been a curse earlier in my life.
Mm.
You know, but when someone is in front of me or is in my field of energy, I can sense how present they are, how in their heart they are, how open they are. And, you know, when I think about trauma, I love Gabor Mate's definition around trauma is not what happened to you. It's what happens inside of you based on what happened, right?
Right.
So that it essentially, trauma disconnects us from the present moment. So, right, you can see and sense if a person is really present, if they're open, if they're engaged in the conversation, or if they're kind of like looking away or hiding, or they're blocking, or they have something going on internally that they're not feeling or facing or sensing. A lot of my people are really hesitant to feel their feelings, and they certainly don't have like a full open heart because they're not feeling safe in their bodies. And that tells me that there's unresolved stuff there, because they're not fully open. They're like, they have a closed off energy or aura. And when we're protecting, that means that we are essentially having a trauma response versus the other side of our nervous system that's made to fully connect, made to fully attract, to let in. But a lot of us are walking around in a wounded state and don't even know it.
This is so interesting because, like, for me personally, doing the work on myself and getting to where I'm at, but then knowing that there's still stuff, even though I've done the work, there's still stuff that comes up. And it's always, and I think you can be doing well in life, I feel like, and you see this a lot with like entrepreneurs and people, but like there's still stuff that needs to be healed. And like, sometimes I'm like, well, how is this ever going to go away? Like, how does this ever fully go away? Or do we just learn to kind of live with it and deal with it when it comes? You know, like, even for yourself, like with your own things, we all have our things. It's like, how do you navigate that after, like, you know, doing all the work and, you know, you're successful in doing the things, but things come up and it's like, well, wait a second, I thought I worked through that. Like, what does that look like? Like, how do we do that as people that are doing the work, but it's like, shit, this stuff's still coming up. Like, what the fuck's going on here?
Like, I know, right? It's so real. I've come to understand that one of the biggest lies and disservices that we've been fed is that the work is going to be over at some point.
Right.
It really never is. It just changes and it evolves and it comes in a new way. So I like to look at the work as like the layer of an onion or like a lotus petal that's like folding like step by step or journey or milestone at a time throughout your life, right? Like me, obviously, in, you know, the relationship with my son is going to bring up a different kind of wounding in me, right? I had a huge wound. One of my core wounds is the feeling of being like invisible, like the invisible child, like no one even cares that I'm around, you know, as far as like all this stuff is happening that's chaotic around me. And it's like, I'm not even in the room. So when my child does things like ignores me because he's playing a game or doesn't answer me, I notice that bubble up inside where I want to harden and I want to get reactive. And I'm like, oh no, that's my wound that's resurfacing, right? So it happens in different ways, but what, you know, like when you're an empowered state or has done enough work, you know yourself well enough to know what's coming up in you and why, because you're so self-aware that I know, I'm like, okay, I get it. I know that when he does X, that causes this to come up in me. And it comes up in different ways and different times with different people. And it's never fully, I wouldn't say, I don't want to put a limit on myself as like, it will never be healed. I don't know that, right? Because I'm not my future self yet. But I know that in this moment, if it is still coming up, it's not fully cleared out, and that my higher self wants me to look at it in a new light. And it doesn't mean that I didn't do the work. It just means like, hey, this can be presented in a new way. And this is how it's showing up for you right now. Are you going to make the choice to react to it? Or are you going to be curious and you're going to actually like respond to it and be like, oh, okay, well, you know, what is this? You know, what's happening inside of me? And, you know, is that a trauma response or is that, you know, just the way that things are right now? And that could be okay. And I think we get to a place of feeling like if we're enlightened enough that this stuff isn't going to happen anymore. And, you know, and I don't want to get like tough on the spiritual community, but what I think that that community does in some ways is it feeds you this lie that if you're having reactions or you're, you know, responding unconsciously, then you haven't done enough of the work. And that's not true, because the work is being human here in the 3D and learning how to navigate that. And learning how to like be curious about that so that you can actually feel the feelings and be in the muck and actually forget that you're an enlightened being sometimes.
That's such a good point. Yeah, because I've been thinking about this a lot lately about like even the word spiritual. I'm like, I feel like just doing the work and showing up is being spiritual. Like if you're just living this world, and open, you know, doing your best to show up the best you can with opening your heart and doing the work, it's all a spiritual experience. You don't have to be spiritual to be, you know, to be practicing. And I feel like there's this weird, I have to dress like this or be like this or do this, and that's spiritual. But we're living in a world where like there's a lot you got to live, you got to go into different spaces, you got to adapt. And I feel like being kind and just being, you know, open and accepting of people and just like having an open heart is spiritual in practice. It's like there's people that are like, oh, I'm spiritual, but then they're, you know, or they're like super religious, but then they're assholes to people and then they don't accept people and they don't love people. And it's like what kind of contradiction is that? Like, you don't need to tell me you're fucking spiritual. Just how do you live your life? How do you treat people? How do you treat the cleaning lady? How do you treat the person that when you're getting coffee? How do you treat them when you're feeling in these low vibe states? Like that to me is like, oh, that person's like, they don't even know it, but they're like, you know, that's, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I feel like in the real world is like a spiritual practice in form.
Yeah, what drives me crazy is this term, oh, I just need to meet it with love and light. I'm like, bullshit. You're denying your humanity around what upset you. And let's work through that first so that doesn't stay in you and you don't bypass the emotion and like meet it with love and light. Like that language is so not real. And you can feel it. It's a felt sense in someone that's like, this feels like it's like a false identity, right? Like, it doesn't resonate with me very well. Like, what resonates with me is like someone that can be like raw and real and own their crap and take responsibility and accountability and have a conversation about how they showed up and why and like want to work on it and get better at it and like really just communicate and then connect.
Yeah.
Because then eventually you'll get to a higher stage of love and light if you're doing that work first in the grounded root chakra of the earth. Like you need to be grounded here in the 3D and hold the higher perspective too.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, like the love and light comes from just being with it. Like being able to look at it from an empowered perspective about like whatever is happening, it's also easy to get lost in that victim mentality, which is also I've seen in the spiritual community where people get so addicted to the drama of things too. And it's like, I think the whole figuring it out is the whole process, right? Because sometimes I've noticed in communities, it's like people, it's almost like they say they want to heal, but it's like they're always finding problems with the same. And so it's like interesting because it's like, well, I understand that side. And it's like, but there's a point where it's like, all right, like you're probably doing better than you think. And you're probably ready to go now. Like you're probably, you know what I mean? But there's like both sides. There's like the love and light and like ignore it, or there's the people that get lost in it. And I think like, and I'm not judging because I've been on both and I've done it and I'm just like figuring it out myself. But like, I think there's like ways to get stuck in both sides. And it's a messy, complicated process sometimes because you also see people on social media, their perspectives, and it's usually the loudest person in the room takes over the narrative of the, and then you start to think things. And it's like a real dance, just navigating everybody's opinions and how people process it. Right. And like, that's what I notice. Yeah.
And I don't, you know, in some ways I've set myself up so I don't have to get too involved in that type of minutiae because
yeah.
It just doesn't resonate. And maybe it's the season of life of where I'm at right now. But I don't have time to deal with other people's opinions and what they're doing and what they're saying and how they're acting. I just don't.
Yeah.
and I refuse to, at least at this point in my life, because my whole first half of my life, I played the comparison game, trying to be like everybody else, wanting everybody to like me, wanting to appear perfect. And now I'm just like, this is me.
You don't have comparisonitis?
Take it or leave it. I wouldn't say comparisonitis, but I would say the way that things show up is like, it's like, I wonder, it's not necessarily what that person thinks of me, but it's what I think of myself.
Right.
Right. Like how do we, you know, there's thing that like my higher self, you know, source keeps working with me on in a new way to bring that back up again. And one thing that keeps cycling back is the perfectionist part of my personality, right? Which showed up in many, many, many different ways and in different capacities throughout my life. But now that I would say I'm at a place where I am accepting of myself, I do love myself, I do know myself, I do know my worth, which took a hell of a lot of time to get to that place. It's like little pings come in shards of like how my, like the grid of my social media, right? It's like, oh, I don't like if something doesn't look perfect there. It's out of alignment. Like it shows up in different ways. And I'm like, oh, that's still there. I gotta figure out what that's about. My hyper productive part of my personality, right? Like if I'm forcing or if I'm trying to be too productive, then I know that that's my perfectionist, right? So it shows up in ways, but it's not necessarily comparing myself to other people. It's like, what do I think of myself?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because I think, would you say that your opinion of yourself is going to be more, it's going to affect how you, when you see somebody else online doing things, you're only going to go into those comparison states if you don't feel good about where you're at, right? Would you say that like, or you're not comfortable where you're at? Like if you're vibing and you're feeling good and you're like, and then you don't really care about the other people, right?
I think that's true. And what I've also learned is like the law of like elimination to eliminate, right? So people in the outer world will either show you the things that you want to eliminate in your life and what you don't want, or what you want to emulate and what you want to be like, or what you're calling in. And so if things like that happen to me, like let's just say, you know, this person goes on an amazing vacation and I notice a ping of envy, then I'm like, oh, well, that must be something that I'm longing for, that I desire, that I'm denying myself of, that I know is possible for me if I open myself up to that.
Oh, interesting.
Right. Or if someone's doing something that like aggravates me or irritates me, I'm like, oh, I definitely don't want that in my life, but it's coming into my field. So am I doing that in a way that I haven't yet allowed myself to acknowledge? Like, I'm always bringing it back to curiosity about my stuff.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Because it's never really about the other person. It really just isn't. No, it's not.
That's so interesting about how, yeah, like what comes up in us, what we see in other people is a reflection of what's going on and like, well, maybe we haven't healed. Would you say that's, because yeah, on social media too, you know, you see people that the haters and stuff are like, and or like, you know, and it's not even about you. It's like, how are they feeling about themselves that they need to do, like, you almost want to give them a hug. Like these people that are so angry and sad and they just spend their time just like hating other people and bringing people down. It's like, you know, part of you wants to just tell them off. But part of me is like, man, this person really needs the healing more than anybody.
They're so wounded.
Right? Like once you start to see above the clouds a little bit, you're like, wow, there's the people that are hurting. And it's almost like, I don't want to feed that beast. I don't want to like get, you know, like, but I see it a lot. I see a lot. And not to say like I'm like Mr. Johnny Enlightened or anything, but I can tell like from seeing where I used to feel that getting lost in that versus like, oh, wait a second. Okay. I know a little bit better than I used to. So I don't know if that's the right thing. And it's been like that during this crazy time with like all the, you know, with the pandemic and stuff. It's like, you know, doing the work during that process, it's been interesting to be like, oh, wow. Like a lot of people are like, they're stuck in that. And you want to get mad, you want to like shake them. But at the same time, it's like you just have to accept that's where they are. And it's like that in life in general, right?
Absolutely. You know, that's their truth. And what I've learned is that when people are behaving in that way, they, based on their history, their upbringing, their model or blueprint of the world and what they've experienced, like that is very, very true and real for them.
Yeah.
And if they're not ready to be convinced out of that or to see something different, who are you to try to make them do that?
True.
Right? That's not your job. That's God's job. That's Source's job, their higher self. Right? But it's interacting with you in a way for you to take a look at something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, have you ever been there? Can you relate to that? Are you actually like that with someone in your life, but you're not willing to look at it? And that's what it's actually trying to show you.
Complete ownership.
Right. Always.
Ownership. Always. And it feels good to own your shit.
It does.
Right. It does. When you're like, hey,
it's easier.
I'm responsible for where I'm at right now. And look, if it's not perfect, that's okay. This is the journey of life. Mm-hmm. Like, it's okay.
Yeah. And we've also been denied our own power. So when people think of the term shadow or like what's in the dark, actually what's also in the dark is the fact that we are really powerful creative beings. And so when you see someone on your social media that essentially like has what you desire and that ping of envy is like, you know, your higher self, you can have this. That belongs to you. Why are you denying yourself of that? Why are you dumbing yourself down? Right? Like we are made to remember the power we have through our own creation. And we've been, you know, essentially misguided and steered away from that in a thousand different ways that we can certainly, you know, talk about, which I think we don't need to, but we forget our power. We forget, you know, it's I don't necessarily know if it's forgetting or if it's been conditioned. I think it's a little both. But to remember that is empowering in itself, right? It's like, of course I'm going to do that, right? Oh, of course this money showed up in my bank account when I didn't expect it to. Of course I'm going to take this trip that I want to take to Egypt someday. Yeah, that's all going to be mine.
Hmm. Yeah. Like, why? Oh, I mean, we could go there. Well, let's go there. Why do you think that we... I know where this is going, but I love it. Why do you think that we've been misled? Like, why do you think that we were misled and things are coming out and we have to unlearn things to remember? You know, what is the reasoning in like having to do tying in why we're here? Because I want to kind of like tie this into our conversation. I was thinking, I was like, I really want to talk about this, but I was like, how are we going to?
Steve. Uh-oh, Lance. Here we go. Rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I can only say what I believe from my experience, obviously, you know, there's thousands of different theories out there and thousands of different, podcasts that I'm sure you can listen to go down that rabbit hole. But I truly believe that each soul chooses to incarnate for very specific reasons. And I do think that there are people essentially that do choose to take on a darker energy so that certain souls can advance. For instance, if I look at the people that played the roles that they played in my life, I believe that they did that as a sacrifice so that I could advance to my higher purpose and to my power. For instance, you know, the women in my family that dumbed themselves down and stayed in not so healthy relationships, right? Like that was their karma. That was my that's their intergenerational programming in my family lineage that I do feel that I took on to be able to alchemize and to be able to overcome that and to shift for generations to come. However, I also do believe that there is, you know, a different kind of darkness that has like an agenda. You know, what that is I think to keep us asleep. I think to keep us unwell. I think to keep us sick. I think to keep us playing in the program of the matrix. So the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, and we essentially feel like we are not here for any reason and that we're not sovereign divine beings. There's an ulterior motive and agenda that is constantly being revealed and exposed that is, you know, as you know, shut down in a lot of ways. And I think it's a very individual process for each individual soul to figure out what that means to them. You know, some people choose not to wake up in this lifetime to experience karma. Some people choose to come here and to take on the trauma to wake up. It's not person specific by any means. Is what I believe.
how do you, if somebody, because there's people that deny things like trauma, they deny that this stuff, they just deny that anything is happening like that. Like, how do you help make sense of like what you believe to other people about this kind of stuff? Like,
I speak to their soul. I don't directly go at that. I call that the adversarial voice or like the inner shamer or like the part of the personality that wants to come against and wants to deny and wants to essentially wreak havoc on someone's internal world through their mind. I don't go at that voice. I speak underneath it. There is a part of you inside of you that knows that you are good enough and that you didn't come from a family that conditioned you to feel worthy and valuable. So help me understand why or what's good about denying that truth. You know, I just do like lots of different questioning so that I can speak to the part of them, their higher self that chose this body, that chose this vessel, to kind of like break through that really hard programming to get underneath it so that they can be like, oh, yeah, maybe she's right. I just plant seeds until they're ready to receive it.
What about to the people that just like the real science people, like the people that are like, you know, like, oh, well, we're just here. Nothing has any reason. Like, we're just here. You know,
oh, I've had those conversations with those friends and I've learned very, very quickly that those types of people don't want to hear different perspectives. So unless they actually are interested or want to hear different perspectives or why I think the way that I think, I choose not to engage in those types of conversations because it's unilateral and it's one-sided. Their job is to try to convince me of something else.
Right.
And I don't engage in those types of conversations. It's a waste of my energy because I know that where they're at in their development for their soul, that's 100% truth to them. However, 3 years later, I had the same people coming back to me saying, hey, maybe I do believe there is a God, but I don't believe it's some man with a beard out there in the sky. I believe it's an energy. Can we talk about that? Right? Like, I always let it just come back full circle for that person to essentially say, if I do want to explore those topics, Alicia is the person that I can go to and trust.
Have you seen people go from being complete atheists through your work to like having this like deep feeling? Like once they work through the trauma and they start to clear that out. And I'd love for you to explain the process of what happens, intuition, heart, once you do the healing work. But have you seen somebody, or, you know, like come from that place of like closed walls, heart closed, trauma, and then, oh, wait a second, unlimited possibilities. Like, have you experienced seeing that? And what is that like? And I would love to kind of hear about, like, for people that want to kind of understand trauma a little bit better and how it helps us with like connecting to that and like intuition and, you know, our higher selves.
Yeah, I don't have anybody in mind specific that was like a hard no. Because I truly believe that not everybody is really a hard no. I think that that is a part of their personality that's coming out to take on that role based on X, Y, and Z. So I do a lot of internal family systems and parts work. Well, let's get to know that part of you. You know, like, where, how old does that part feel? When did you start to have these beliefs? You know, what, you know, how do you explain, you know, the energy in the world that makes people's heart beat or like forms a baby in the womb? Or like, do you tell your body to digest your food? What is that energy? Right. So I just get them curious around like, well, that's just the universe. Okay, well, is there a universal force or energy that's on the planet? Okay, well, yeah. Can science prove that that's true? Right, because then science does meet spirituality. It does totally explain that, right?
Totally.
You know, there's no denying that. And it's been proven over and over and over that there is an energetic frequency. You know, if you speak love and light and like blessings into your water, it changes the molecules in the water, right? Just through words, through the vibrational frequency of what you're saying. So then it becomes a conversation of, well, you know, this part talks to you in kind of a mean way. How do you think that that changes how you feel about yourself? Did you ever think that you could think differently? Do you like what it says? Do you believe what it says? Where does it come from? Is that even your voice? Because to me, it sounds like it's your father, right? And they're like, oh, yeah. You know, like you just literally get to see the light bulbs going off where they start to make those shifts over time as they're doing that inner work, where they're becoming literally curious about the thoughts they're having, about the feelings that are coming up, because the soul, the higher self, it doesn't want you to hold them anymore. It doesn't, you know, it's blocking you from seeing the truth of your divinity and who you really are. So it's like this armor and this layer that as you start to work through that layer and you feel the feelings and you grieve the pain and you let yourself get in touch with your full expression of, sometimes it's even anger. Like I work with so many people who have inhibited grieving and like unprocessed, unfelt rage, right? They won't allow themselves to get mad. They just absorb everything, right? So sometimes I say to people, well, now that you're angry, I actually have a client because that's showing me that you value yourself and you care about yourself enough to get mad. So that is the process of like unfolding and unwinding these stories, these beliefs, and like working with these parts of the personality to help people really get in touch with what their true essence is underneath all of that. Where's the kid that used to play? What did you used to love to do when you were young? Where did you get lost? Like, you know, what was your way that you escaped, you know, whatever was going on at home or what was happening? You know, where are your gifts that you've denied? And then they start to kind of come into themselves of like, oh my gosh, like I've been living completely out of alignment with who I really am. The truth is that I hate my life. I hate my wife. I don't really like being a parent, or I don't like the way I am parenting because I've been taught X, Y, and Z. So then we can actually get into like the change part. Well, how do you want to change? What do you want to create? What do you want to cultivate? What kind of conversations do you want to have? How do you want to be living? But you can't get to that place until they're in like a more of aligned, heart-centered place of accepting themselves and taking ownership of the world that they've created based on their conditioning and their programming.
So would you say that identifying what they don't want and what they're not happy with is important first? Like to be aware of behaviors or be like,
yeah, usually people come to me for some kind of symptom. You know, I am binging on unhealthy food. I have a ton of anxiety. I'm addicted to porn. I'm addicted to alcohol. Like, I look at that and I'm like, okay, well, that's what's presenting right now. Let's move backwards and figure out how that came into existence and what you're denying in yourself and what you're not feeling and what you're not acknowledging.
Yeah. And what is it usually? Child stuff? Like, if somebody's addicted to porn, because you see this a lot, it's not talked about, man. Yeah. I mean, it's everywhere. It's like, that doesn't have to necessarily mean like sexual trauma, right? Like, how does somebody get addicted to that stuff? Like, what is that?
Super. You know, I mean, I could easily, probably boldly say that it's so infiltrated in our culture, right? Yeah. Like, you know, women are looked at as sexual beings and men are visual. Don't think that our media doesn't play on the fact that men are visual.
True.
Right? And so in order to get relief, right, you naturally do the biological thing, which is masturbate. And then that actually creates homeostasis in the body because there's a physical felt sense of relief from stress, right? So that then it becomes this thing of, if I do this, I feel this. So that's how it starts to get paired, right? So you're not necessarily addicted to like the image. You're addicted to the feeling that it gives you that you can't achieve in other ways through other means.
Right.
Especially if a child, like oftentimes this starts really when men are very, very young, teenage years, some of my clients when they were 5, right? Like, because they don't know how to deal with the chaos that's happening at home, this becomes their way to get pleasure, to self-soothe, to get relief, to like literally express or like let go of the stress in the body. Then it becomes the addiction because it's uncontrollable and it's habitual. It's a pattern in the brain now. When I feel this, this is what I do. When I feel this, this is the answer. When I feel this, I do this to feel better. It becomes a hardwired, hard programmed response that it takes time to work on unpairing and unwinding. Because the truth is, like, I've never learned how to self-soothe in another way. I never learned that it was okay to feel my feelings. I never learned that it was okay to ask for help or to get my needs met, especially for men, because they're so taught to suppress and to not be vulnerable.
Can that be transferable to like addicted to women in general? Like,
absolutely. You know, and there is this component of inadequacy. Right. Like, a lot of men will feel inadequate, unworthy. They will feel not good enough. And based on society's standards, it's conditioned that if women are interested in you and like this happens, then my ego gets inflated. But the problem is that doesn't last and it's temporary. And so it just becomes this like cyclical cycle of, not enough. And then I need to take it to a new level. And so that's where we get into other types of, like BDSM, like other types of porn, where because the brain or the dopamine isn't being released from just the normal, you have to kind of like up the ante or up the bar, right? That's tolerance. Same thing with alcohol, right? Like,
right.
Beers are no longer doing it for me. I need a bottle of vodka, right? Like, you always are upping the ante. When it comes
to coffee, like it's all the same shit.
All of it, right? Food, everything. It's never enough. It's never satiated. It's what they talk about in Buddhism as like the hungry ghost.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's never, ever, ever full.
It's always the same outcome. Like, I've said that to people that when it comes to drinking, you know, for me, it's always like, you know, I've gone a year, I've gone 9 months or whatever. It's like, it's not hard for me to quit when I'm, when I know I need to, but like, there's always that thing that, oh, maybe it's different this time. Like, maybe how I'll react is different. And for me, and maybe it's different for people, but like, for me, it's always like, oh, why like that again? Fuck. It's the same thing. Like, and I'm like, why do I, if I know it doesn't work for me, like, and, you know, and that's kind of like the thing with these things too. It's like the outcome never really changes. It's always going to kind of, and it's sneaky because like, even when I went off for like a whole year, I was like, oh, I can have a champagne at Christmas. Remember in Australia, and I had one, and then all of a sudden, oh, he's back. And then thoughts about wanting to go and party and like, you know, get me a bag. And I'm like, what? I thought that was gone. Like, what the fuck? And that was fascinating because it's like the outcome doesn't change. Like, it's still there.
Yeah, it's true. And we all have that part of ourselves, right? Yeah. You know, the whole is the sum of its parts, right? That part is not gone just because you evolved. That part is still very there. Maybe dormant. But if you give it the right environment, it's going to come back out, right?
Yeah.
Here's something that'll blow your mind, right? So Gabor Marte also says, which I love his work, but he's, you know, every addiction is the root cause of that is unprocessed, unacknowledged shame. And interestingly enough, after someone actually engages in the behavior they don't want to engage in, whether that's binging on food, whether that's drinking, whether that's spending money, whether that is, you know, giving into porn, like the feeling on the back end of that is always shame. So we could go ahead and say that what you're actually not acknowledging and what you're actually addicted to is that feeling of shame. What? So your soul is trying to communicate to you that there is undigested things that you're ashamed about that you actually haven't looked at, acknowledged, or like felt through.
I got chills when you said that. I'm not kidding. Twice it went through, and then I was like, "Whoa, was that the thing?" And it was like you said it again, and I, like, my whole body. Wow, I didn't even think about that.
Mm-hmm. Super powerful.
So it's the shame. Would you say the shame that we're addicted to, or the shame that? Because that's so true.
Our soul wants us to acknowledge the shame.
Like that shame you get is always the outcome.
Always the outcome.
Why the fuck did I do that? Oh, I was so on top of my game. And it's like, oh, what's the big deal? No big deal. And then it happens. You're like, oh, every time. You never feel better. Like,
yeah, here's what the brain will do, right? So the brain will be like, oh, I don't want to feel that. So I'm going to try to control this. And I'm never going to touch this again. I'm never going to do this again, right? Blah, 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 blah. But it doesn't actually look at,
wow,
you know, like, what's really going on here? This behavior is giving me this. The work is always the feeling. Always the feeling. Right. There's a protocol that I'm training. It's called the feeling state addiction protocol. Right. So you look at the feeling that you get when you're actually using the substance or when you're doing the thing. A lot of it is like euphoria. Sometimes it's numbness. Sometimes it's relaxation. But the feeling is actually what the brain gets addicted to, not necessarily the substance.
Right.
Right. So it's like, all right, well, where in my life do I not feel relaxed and calm?
Right.
If I'm using the alcohol to do this for me, then that tells me that there's something I'm not acknowledging in my life and I don't feel like I can have it. So I have to rely on the substance to give it to me. You know, when I realized and I took a break from alcohol and I realized that like it wasn't the alcohol that made me more fun. I thought I needed that to bring that part of me out. Like I'm a damn good time whether I'm sober or when I'm drinking. Like I don't need to like, you know, be this wild and crazy person that like, you know, stops caring about life by putting drinks in my body and what I now believe is poison, is like, I don't need that to be more Alicia. That's in me already.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, you have to look at what is the feeling? What is the belief? Then how do I feel after, you know, and what is it that I'm really not aware of or paying attention to? Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I love doing this work, because I could geek out on it all day.
Oh my God. But it's so real. It's so real. We're all, every single one of us is going through this in some way, shape, or form. Unless you're sitting in a monk in Tibet, like you're going to face these things.
Absolutely.
And everybody has their thing. And that's the beauty of, for me, interviewing so many people over the years. It's like everybody's got the thing that they don't feel confident about, or they're like, you know, like, oh, you don't have that figured out. Oh, and then they have their thing. You dig deeper, they got their thing. And you must see this all the time with like just people in general. Everybody's kind of got their thing, but you may not hear about it or talk about it. And I feel like alcohol specifically, I feel like is one of these things where I think intentionally, if you can plan and go, look, I'm going to have something for that occasion. And that's what I'm going to do. And you can do that. Great. I think like people, there are people that can do that, like limitations. But I would recommend, if I like someone like myself, that's hard for me to do. And I would prefer to just not do the thing. But I think for me, the reason about alcohol was so attractive was because I was going through so much pain and I didn't like who I was. I didn't know who I was. And when I drank, it was like this new person was invented. I was like, oh, all that shit I don't feel anymore. I don't feel inadequate. I don't feel insecure. I'm like, I got this new character and I'm getting all this feedback. And I'm like, whoa, I want more of that validation, right? And I think a lot of people, at least from my perspective, they suffer from this social anxiety where it's like they don't even know how to be themselves. So they just got to like drink poison just so they can like get this like baseline of like, this is me. Hey, isn't that wild to think about? Like how we're conditioned back to like intentionally do it. I don't like, it's hard to say, oh, the world's intentionally, but why is it even legal? Like, why is that even the thing that we do in the first place? Like, if you zoom up and you look down at Earth, like, how insane is that? People go into a room, they drink this poison, they dance around, and then they go and, like, they could potentially kill somebody. Like, it's so crazy to me that we do that. Like,
it is. But what's even crazier is, like, to the soul, it's not the alcohol that's poison. To the soul, what's poison is the judgment of yourself. Right?
Because right.
Judgment is a human thing. It's not your higher self. So when you judge yourself and you shame yourself and you condemn yourself, your higher self is like, here we go again. We came to work through this. Like, right, you know, you're the divine creator. You know, you're the I am presence here in human form.
Yeah.
So you're better off owning the choice of, hey, I made that horrible mistake. Let me look at it and dissect it and figure out, is this really how I want to be living or what I want to be doing with my life and with my time? Or am I just going to judge myself about it, clean up, and then do it again the next weekend?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When you truly love yourself, and this is kind of like the path that I'm on lately, is you actually start to see your body as a physical vessel for you to experience life through. And for me, I didn't stop drinking alcohol this year because it was bad for me. I stopped doing it because I didn't like how I felt energetically.
Yeah.
Right? Like I don't want to feel tired. I don't want to feel like I'm not producing or working or like in my heart. I don't want to feel out of alignment with my truth.
Yeah.
Right. So that comes down to the food I want to put in my body and how I want to take care of my body. Right. It's a process that each person can get to if they choose to.
Yeah.
Right? I don't care what people do, whether they're drinking, not drinking, doing, you know, whatever. Like what I care about is like what's in your heart. You know, like how are you beating yourself up?
Yeah.
Let's work on that and give you some grace for being on the hardest freaking planet in the galaxy.
Yeah. And again, it comes back to you got to try it yourself. Like what I'll say if people have asked me, hey, should I quit drinking or whatever? And I go, well, how is your life going? Like, can you get up early and work? Do you feel good? Are you in shape? Like, do you making lots of money? Hey, like who am I to judge? If you're killing it in life and you got it, like you can drink your tequila like The Rock, who am I to judge if you're killing it? Right. But hey, if you keep reliving the patterns and then you keep self-sabotaging, your life is in shambles, well, maybe you should take a little bit of a break and just see if that helps, right? Because it's like, you pay attention to where you're at. Like, you know, I mean, what else can you say other than what's your life look like? Like,
How do you feel about how do you feel about yourself?
Yeah.
Let's look at that.
Yeah.
You know, and when you start to work through the baseline of why that behavior is there, addicted or not, you know, you could be addicted to anger, to rage, you know, whatever. Like, let's look at the underlying reasons and the cause that's happening and that's been conditioned in you and start from baseline. right? Because if you just, you know, like they call it like a dry drunk, right? And I get that some people have to do that, but let's look at the fact of why that behavior was there for so long and what your soul's trying to communicate to you and trying to help you work through, so that it doesn't have to be this, you know, push and pull tug of war relationship with it. You know, there's a difference between making an unconscious choice, an unconscious, like driven, like impulsive decision versus discernment and conscious awareness. I'm doing this because of this, and it is my conscious choice, and I'm fully aware of the risks that I'm engaging in and how I'm going to feel after, and I'm still choosing to say yes. I'd much rather have it that way and have people like take ownership of that than like do some unconscious thing and then shame themselves for it later, but not looking at why that unconscious drive is there in the first place.
Yeah, that's the thing, the unconscious drive. Why is the unconscious drive there in the first place?
Well, there's a rabbit hole because our personality is
what a question.
In the 5 years of our lives, right? We are who we're going to be, literally personality-wise, within the first 3 years of existence of our lives. Like, that's mind-blowing to me.
So, okay, that I've heard so many different things. People have said 0 to 10. People have said 0 to 5. People have said you can still in your teen years, so 0 to 5 is like things got to go right in that age. Otherwise, it's going to be challenging later on. Why is that? Like, what is the reason behind it being 5 and not like in your teen years as
much? Because it has to do with the development of the brain.
Right.
Right. So when you are born, you're essentially a blank slate. Like, we're going to leave past life stuff out of this one for a second. Essentially, let's just say you've never lived a past life and you're coming into Earth for the first time. You are a blank slate, and your environment and, you know, the genes that you inherit, obviously from your parents, are shaping you as a soul or as a human individual. And the older you get, like, you go through developmental stages, right? So the first developmental stage is the stage of codependency, which is from 0 to 2. So this is where you are absolutely 100% like dependent on your parents for survival. And if trauma happens in that stage, birth trauma, physical abuse, sexual abuse, anything like that, a part of the personality can get stuck in that stage of development. And then stage, you know, 2 to 5, it's what's called the counter-dependent stage. Like, so this is what people term the terrible 2s or the terrible 3s, where like that little being is trying to gain control over what happens to their body, what they eat, what they wear. Like, they don't want anyone controlling them. They want to be in control, which is a really hard stage that all parents know about. But that's what's happening because the brain is developing and it's trying to figure out where they fit in. And so then 5 to 7 to 8 is what's called the independent stage, where you're like, actually, your brain has developed enough for you to start to know that you are a separate being, you are a separate entity, you are not your parents, you are your own thing, right? So that's why that happens around that age of like, oh, I'm separate. But if there's like trauma in those first 7 years, you can get stuck in these certain stages of development, and then you can replay certain patterns and cycles throughout your adult lives. And then, you know, if all goes well, you have a safe home, you have, you know, parents who dive into you, they build your self-esteem up, you've never had anybody made fun of you, you've never had anything happen to you, then you can get to what's called the interdependent stage, where it's like, I know who I am fully in truth, and I know who other people are, and I need others and they need me, and I'm no longer independent, I'm interdependent on community to survive. Right. So depending on what happens in those very, very first years is where we can essentially get stuck as a soul or as a personality that we need to continue to work through later in life. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. And then I always come back to, well, what's better, not going through any shit and like getting to that stage where it's like, I've never been through anything. I've been raised in this environment, and it's almost like you're gonna have to go through it at some point, right? Like, what would you say is the better option? Go through it as a kid, And that's what find it's interesting to me is like some that go through that stuff don't get out of it. And then some do. And they've had this horrible lives, been through a lot. Like you had a, you know, you've been through a lot and be able to come out and do what you do. It's fascinating to me how that works in some people. But at the end of the day, it's like you want to keep your child safe, but at the same time, you know that, hey, life is tough sometimes. You can get your ass kicked. And if you don't have a little bit of resilience, man, the world is going to eat you alive when you're in the real world. Like, so it's like, what's better? You know, how do we raise kids in a way that keeps them strong, mentally, you know, empowered, but like, you know, without harming them? Like, what do we do?
I have no idea. I just choose to parent my kid consciously. Right. I choose to let him know that you're not mine, right? Like you came through me, but you are not mine. You are of God. You are of spirit. You are here for a reason. You have a purpose. This life is hard. I am here to help you navigate that life. But I know that, like, I don't let him make certain choices, but we have conversation, pretty deep conversation that I would have for like a 10-year-old kid, because, you know, he came out of the womb advanced. Like he came out of the womb, like wanting to be independent and wanting to you know, do things on his own. And he's my child. So he has a lot of my strong personality traits. And we definitely butt heads a lot. But we also come back in conversation around, like, this is what I'm seeing. This is, you know, what did you see? Like, let's talk about that. You know, gone are the days of, in my opinion, like the children that are coming into this earth plane right now, they are not responding well to the way that we have parented. Like our generation, like our parents are, you know, they didn't know better, right? They were hurt. They were wounded. They didn't know that they were supposed to let a child feel their emotions. You know, we were put in our cribs and like let the child cry themselves to sleep so that they can self-soothe. What we know now is that causes immense abandonment wounds, with that immense emotional deprivation wounds. And it makes the child feel really unsafe because that anxiety is stuck in their body that they then have to deal with later in life, right? So there are things out there now, conscious parenting in a way that you parent to either, like, you know, help the soul, like have a better chance at success, but also know that that soul chose very specific things to go through in this lifetime to work through that you can help support them with. That's how I choose, right? Because life, it is hard. Like there's no, you know, you don't want to be the helicopter parent, but you want to set them up for success in that, like, hey,
yeah,
come and talk to me. I want to be your source for information because there's a lot of bad crap out there in the world.
Yeah. And give them the tools to be able to handle things. Because you can't deny, you can't shelter people from things. So why not equip them with the tools so that, hey, you'll be good. You're good. You got the tools, you know? You're not going to know until it happens. And that's right. Like, that's so important. And I think that's why sports is good too.
Hell yeah.
Kids, like, you know, like literally just choosing competition and battle and team and like, you know,
and men need that.
Yeah, they do.
They need that, you know, and I think there's such a disservice to this world of trying to make men be more like women. I think it's like,
No.
We need men to be in their heart center and like feel their feelings. Yes. But we do not need to like buy into that concept of like toxic masculinity and like the world's gone mad. Like, no.
Yeah.
Like we're all wounded and we are all responsible for what's going on here.
Yeah.
You know, so I all like teach men to, yes, be strong, but also to stay connected here.
Yeah. And yeah, like strong. This is what I used to think strong meant. Like I used to think raising my voice and getting mad and like showing my control by getting, you know, cause that's how I was taught. Oh, dad's mad, you know? And it's like, that's actually weak. Mm. That's not being a strong man. Yeah. We're going to get angry. But like trying to like, if that's your way of dealing with things and getting mad and like, you know, hiding from what the actual thing is, I don't think that's the right way. And now I've learned, I'm like, actually the strength is in the be able to hold composure and listen to the people's opinions and listen and like take a breath before reacting and like being in your heart, like you said. It's like, and being patient and like not projecting your thoughts and beliefs right away on somebody. Cause that's all I knew. And that's how I was taught. And I realized, I'm like, that's not the way.
Yeah.
That's not the way. That is not strength. That is weakness. Like,
yeah. And it doesn't feel good, right?
No, like it doesn't.
It doesn't feel good afterwards. And that's how you know, right? Like our feelings are our GPS system for how to navigate life.
Yeah.
If something's not feeling that great, it's like, well, let's take a look at that.
Yeah.
Why am I doing that? Because that's obviously a learned behavior. And I think it's so many men learn that way. And, you know, and then we want to blame them. It's like, they're just as wounded, right? Like we talk about women having daddy issues, like men have mommy issues too. You know, like we've all got wounding here.
Oh, big time.
And so I think it's not about blaming. It's about really each person choosing to do that inner work so that we don't continue to add more harm into the collective.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I want to just transition and then we'll work at wrapping it up. We went longer than I thought we're gonna, but that's
no,
I know you gotta forever. I know you gotta call in 30 minutes, so we'll try and wrap this up like in the next 5 minutes. Awesome. But I want to talk about how the methods that you use, because we're both very aligned with like breath work. And now, like, what I find interesting about your work is that, and why I think anybody listening needs to pay attention to why you're an asset to them, is that you know all the stuff about this stuff. You've done the traditional therapist route, and then you've gotten into the spiritual stuff, and you've learned, you know, somatics and breath work. And now you have both of these worlds coming together as one. So you understand that, because usually it's one or the other.
Sure.
Traditional way is very like, no, I don't want to listen. This is the way it's done. And then there's the other way which is fine, you know, like the spiritual way and like not the traditional way, which is fine too. But the fact that you have both is really, really interesting. And I find that when we got to know each other and talk and stuff, I find that to be really, really fascinating, because most people don't have that. So maybe if you can like explain to us how that's maybe evolved your practice and like how breath work can help people that are experiencing trauma, and in maybe ways that they can work with you, or ways that you know, maybe give somebody a little bit of advice on like if they are stuck, like what they could do.
Yeah. I'm incredibly blessed. Like, I really believe that everything is energy. And so the people that I'm now attracting into my practice are actually people that are ready to do that work. Like, I'm no longer doing the work of like actually waking people up to the truth of their divinity. Like, they kind of have a sense that like something else is going on here. I know I'm not really living the way I want to be living, and I just need somebody to help me figure that out. You know, so I like to work with people who are kind of like on the brink of, you know, this isn't necessarily working. Something's out of alignment with me. Let me go to like a spiritual teacher, therapist that can help really guide me for what I know that I need to be doing, or what I want to change, or how I want to feel about myself. So I really kind of attract that type of clientele where they have, you know, kind of some spiritual background, but also knowing that they have things in their life that they don't want to be doing, or they want to change. And I always start with the foundation or the premise of like, there's a divine intelligence inside of you. It's the part of you that led you to me. It's the part of you that is always communicating. Let's help you learn how to listen, right? Let's do that work. I have a lot of people who are afraid to journal. Okay. So if that's the case, if you're afraid to journal, you're afraid to put pen to paper. All right. Well, then let's talk about that part that's afraid to look within. Let's do the parts work. So I always do internal family systems work. If that's coming up in you, that is not the real you. That's a part of you that you created to protect yourself, or to get you through what you needed to get through to survive the circumstances in your life, right? So what part of you is blocking your emotion? Are you afraid to feel? I can see it. When you start to talk to me, you start to tear up, but then you shut it down. That's a conditioned response. Are you aware of that? You know, so I teach them how to be somatically aware of the sensations in the body that are always happening first, then based on those sensations, an emotion forms, and then based on that an emotion, a thought forms. People think that the thinking happens first, and it doesn't, right? So let's do somatic awareness. What's going on? Let's slow it down, help you become in tune and aware so that you can actually be the witness to what's happening in your mind and body. And then once they're able to understand that, that's when I'll bring in the breath work, right? Because I will never introduce breath work to somebody if they're afraid to feel their feelings. They'll never want to touch breath work again.
Right.
Right. So I have to help them get comfortable and in tune with their body first, and to learn to trust their body and to let that come up, so that the breath work that I teach, which is somatic release breath work, which is very specific to release the trauma. There's different types of breath that are meant for like grounding, centering, refocusing. That is a part of it. If someone's really anxious, I'll try to teach them to breathe. But oftentimes anxiety makes people not want to tune in, right? It's an avoidance feeling. I don't want to feel, right? So it's all this stuff. So the work really is around getting people to be comfortable in the felt sense of their body. And then I will introduce the breath work practice of, you know, the deep inhales and exhales, and really that somatic release breath work, along with journaling, internal family systems and parts work, and being curious about the parts of themselves and how they formed and how they showed up and what their triggers are, as well as what is my unhealed wounding from my mother's side and my father's side that's showing up in my relationships and how I feel about myself. So it's like this really full, complete package when it comes to working with me, and really helping them trust that intuitive, divine guidance within them that they've been trained out of.
Powerful. It's so important, yeah, to like understand the history of the human that you're sitting with versus just get in the breath work, because not everybody can handle. Not everybody's ready for that. You know, if somebody just got out of
the mistake of that.
Yeah.
Of thinking it was going to be the be all end all fix all. And I put one of my clients through a session because she was so anxious.
Yeah.
And it scared the living crap out of her. She doesn't ever want to try breath work again. I was like, I did it too soon.
But what a great learning lesson, though. Just the fact that you're even able to say that, like, that shows your character. Some people won't even admit things like that. And I just can't trust people like that.
Yeah.
That won't even like, you know what I mean? Just the fact that, because shit happens and it's good to figure it out. You know, you have your breath. Most cases you'll be okay. But some people as well, if they just came out of like a really intense plant medicine ceremony or like ayahuasca, and they're, the last thing they need is like intense, you know, that like you, we could, you know, you could do like a slower restorative breathing just to feel into it. But like, you're not going to put them through like some sort of activation where they're just going to be like, you know. Like, I think it's knowing your crowd, knowing your person. I think that's a big part of the problem nowadays, is like a lot of people don't. And that's where the things like get, but it's like this in all industries with even in psychedelics too. It's like, it's like the people that don't do it properly, given a bad name, but it's like, if you just do it properly and you have care and you actually consider the human being, like, it's such a wonderful tool for healing. But, you know, and I think that's really, really important to do. So I'm glad you do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I get really caught up in like the people are like, oh, I got to do this thing to fix myself. I'm like, you know, that's the wrong intention, because people think that there's going to be this like quick fix or this big breakthrough thing that's going to fix them and make them all better. It's like, that's just not how life works. That's not how nature works. That's not, you know, how source works. And it is, you know, that's also part of what we've been programmed, you know, take this thing to feel this, to do that. It's like, no, like, let's start getting you in line from within so that you can create the change without.
All right. Well, you got a podcast coming out soon, right?
I'm excited about that. It has been, you know, just kind of gnawing at me to really get information out there and to talk to people. I love to talk. I love to share my expertise. And so it's actually going to be launching most likely in March, called Alive and Awake with Alicia. And I will be doing some solo casts where I will help people really dive into certain things. The most recent episode I created was around women not feeling safe in their body or feeling safe with physical touch, which I think is going to be incredibly helpful for men and women if they're dating someone that's like that, but also for women who experience that trauma response in their body, and really learning what that's all about and why that is. And so the solo episodes are just going to be stuff that I'm seeing in my practice that I'm literally helping my clients with that I think the public needs to know about. And then I will be interviewing a lot of different guests where we will really be diving into some of the practical things, whether that's nutrition and how to optimize your health, or whether that is, you know, the spiritual aspect or component of finding your dharma or finding your soul's path and purpose and all things mystical. So it's really going to be a combination of both, like you said, practical, spiritual, and combined into one show that I'm incredibly excited to launch.
I'm excited for you. It's going to be awesome. One piece of advice, if somebody is struggling right now with adversity, that we can maybe give them to walk away with, what would that be?
Mm-hmm. Turn around and face the thing that you're most scared to face. Walk through it. It's meant for you for some reason. You just don't know it yet. Never, ever, ever be afraid. Your soul's got you.
Love that. Where can we, best place to find you?
Social media. So website is AliciaKCoaching.com. Instagram, I'm super active on AliciaKCoaching. LinkedIn, Facebook, all the same.
All the things, yeah.
All the things. Could find me there. Soon, yeah. YouTube. I do have a channel, but that's not quite active yet, but it will be with the podcast.
Well, I'm excited, and I just, you know, what you're doing is amazing, and I really admire your work, and I really appreciate what you bring to the world. And I mean, like we said, we could talk for hours. And I'm like, shit, it's already almost 3. I'm like, there's still thinking, we'll have to do another one. But I really, really honestly appreciate you and how you show up, and just, you know, people would be crazy to not work with you. They get the opportunity. You know,
thank you.
And you guys better act fast, because she's gonna be, you know, booked. It's gonna be a big year. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
I appreciate you, Lance. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Told you it was a jam-packed episode. Alicia is so great at what she does, and I highly recommend you guys going and following her now. All of her information to follow her website, Instagram, Facebook, all of that stuff, YouTube, is in the show notes below, links to all that. And also, we have an opportunity for you to book a free discovery call with Alicia. The link is also down below. And while doing that, ask her about her 6-month program, Breakthrough Bliss, which is designed to help you clear out emotional blocks, trauma, and align with your authentic self. This will be a game changer for you. And if you want to work with somebody that knows what they're doing on a deep level, I highly recommend checking out Alicia and investing in yourself. All right, everybody. If you aren't subscribed to the podcast yet, please make sure you do so wherever you listen. And if you guys got value from this episode, share it with somebody, share us on social media, whatever. Or, you know, if you feel called to it, leave us a review. I know I ask for a lot, but, you know, it's just the way it is. I love you guys. Have yourself an awesome day. And thank you so much. We'll catch you next time.